Welcome to Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 218 for September 19th, 2009. Coming up in a few minutes.
What we've tried to do with Lily, we work with one of the world's great luxury brands to produce a beautiful thing. Something which is a real objet d'art, where you don't only have the beauty of the whiskey itself, but you have the beauty of the vessel it's held in.
That's Ken Greer, Director of Malts at the Edrington Group, on the new $15,000 Macallan Lalique single malt. It's a 57-year-old Macallan in a Lalique crystal decanter, the third in the Lalique series from the Macallan. More with Ken in a few minutes, including details on the Macallan 1824 collection and the upcoming 1964 and 1968 Highland Park vintage releases. First, though, let's look at the week's news. It's Kentucky Bourbon Festival week in Bardstown, and one of the highlights each year is the induction of new members into the Bourbon Hall of Fame. This year's inductees include two members of the Beam family. David M. Beam was the third generation of Beam family members in the line of Jim Beam Master Distillers. His grandfather was Jim Beam founder Jacob Beam, and he was the father of Colonel Jim Beam. He's also the great-grandfather of Heaven Hill Master Distiller Parker Beam and the great-great-grandfather of current Jim Beam Master Distiller Fred Noe. Now, John Henry Beam was the second member of the Beam family inducted into the Hall of Fame. Jack Beam founded the Early Times Distillery near Bardstown in 1860. That's about the time one of Tom Bullitt's ancestors arrived in Kentucky and started making the bourbon that led to Tom Bullitt's induction this week.
It means to me that we've reached a benchmark in Bullitt Bourbon's journey that began with Augustus and coming to America in the early 1800s and then immigrating up to Louisville, distilling and between in 1830 and 1860 maybe, and then me bringing back his recipe in the 1980s and traveling through any number of wonderful partnerships through the years and arriving here in Bardstown where we're celebrating the Kentucky Bourbon Festival this week, and in conjunction with that, we've got some Hall of Famers, and I have been inducted into it, and I'm really thrilled with that. I give the credit to a whole lot of people through the years and generations upon whose shoulders I stand, and I will accept the honor on their behalf.
Did you expect this at all? Did you have any idea that it was coming?
I really didn't. I think this was kind of a surprise. I'm glad I've lived long enough, and it's happened during my life. One of my children, Hollis, as you know, has come in to work with us, and will be here today. And Betsy and my son, wife Betsy, and son Tucker will all be here, as well as our collective family. The bourbon, as you know, the bourbon industry is really a big family, so it's a great honor. It was really an unexpected honor.
What does it mean to you to be inducted along with a couple of members of the Beam family and some very historic figures in the bourbon industry?
Well, I think that makes it even more special. As I mentioned, the Beam family, of course, runs back to what is one of the earliest families in the business. And is a great example of how family oriented the Kentucky distilling business is, and of course it's a great honor to be able to stand there with them and these great iconic name of Beam to place Augustus's Bullitt Bourbon next to that is a great honor for us.
The other inductees included Edward Monahan III, a key figure in the history of Schenley Distillers, Frank Daly of the Kentucky Distillers Association, and Mary Jane Dickerson of the Kentucky Bourbon Festival. Last, but certainly not least, longtime bourbon writer Chuck Cowdery became one of the few whiskey writers to enter the hall. His 2004 book, Bourbon Straight, The Uncut, Unfiltered Story of American Whiskey, is one of the leading books on bourbon. Now, back in 1887, Alfred Barnard wrote the definitive book of the day on Scotch whiskey. You can find a reprint of his Whiskey Distilleries of the United Kingdom in the Whiskey Cast store powered by Amazon.com, but original printings are extremely rare. One has turned up in the UK, though. It'll go on the auction block this week at Lion and Turnbull in Edinburgh. According to the auction house, there are only 5 known original copies of the Barnard book at libraries in the UK and Ireland. Also on the luxury front, if you've ever wanted to have your very own whiskey, White & Mackay will give you just that for a price. For $20,000, master blender Richard Patterson will spend 3 days with you, getting to know your tastes over a few drams, and then he'll create just one custom bottle of whiskey only for you. And if you heard the tasting lesson with Richard last month in episode 211, you know better than to gulp it or put ice in it. Last time around, I mentioned a few of Whiskey Magazine's Icons of Scotland Whiskey Award winners. The complete list is out now. Springbank Distillery took 2 awards, Distillery of the Year, and Springbank's Peter Curry was named Young Ambassador of the Year. Whiskies of Scotland was named Best Single Outlet Retailer, Royal Mile Whiskies Best Multiple Store Retailer, and Loch Fyne Whiskies the Best Online Retailer. As I mentioned last time around, Auchentoshan was named the Best Visitor Attraction, Edrington Group Innovator of the Year, and Highland Park's Jerry Tosh Ambassador of the Year. The winners all go into the worldwide competition, with the winners to be announced next spring at Whiskey Live London. The U.S. awards will be presented November 18th in Louisville. Most bartenders don't wear lab coats, but if you think about it for a second, they're actually chemists of a sort. There's a lot of chemistry involved in making a cocktail, and Canadian Mist is taking a cocktail chemistry lesson to science museums around the U.S. over the next few months. Brown-Forman Chief Entertaining Officer Tim Laird and chemist Steve Hughes will start their tour October 7th in Milwaukee.
We talk a little bit about the history of the cocktail, and then I'm a scientist by background, and so I support Tim Laird and with some fun and put some science into the cocktail story.
And explain that, because this is actually chemistry we're talking about here when you're making a cocktail, right?
Yeah, it's basically, you know, a bunch of ingredients that come together, and I just kind of describe, you know, some of the principles, the basic, you know, chemical principles or physical properties of those ingredients, and how they come together and how that contributes to a cocktail, something that's very pleasurable.
Let's pick a cocktail and deconstruct it chemistry-wise. I'll let you pick one out, but if we can do it just simply for those of us who are not chemistry-minded, I slept through an entire year of high school chemistry. If you can simplify it, how does a cocktail break down?
Well, you first take a look at the ingredients, and probably the primary ingredient or the first ingredient that I think is important is the ice, okay, which is going to kind of cool it off and make it very pleasurable on a refreshing basis. Then there's the alcohol, and there's all kinds of alcohol going from a vodka, which is very bland and clean and crisp, to a full bourbon. So you have a wide range of flavor opportunities there, and the next ingredients that are important are those mixers that you might want to use from sweet to sour. Following that, there may be like the additives, some bitters perhaps, things that might kind of enhance a direction or something, and then a garnish.
And what do each of these, what do the mixers add, for instance?
Well, they're going to bring in a sweet flavor or a savory flavor or a sour flavor. Obviously, it may be carbonated, which is going to add another mouthfeel effect. Those are probably the primary things that are needed there. And then it's going to also reduce the alcohol content.
You'll find the complete list of tour stops on the calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website. Time now for our weekly chat with Jonathan Goldstein at Park Avenue Liquors. Jonathan, anything new in the store this week?
We have plenty of new items this week. Back in stock is a Gordon & McPhail Glenrothes, this 30-year-old, 86 proof. That's 215. I don't know if anyone's a vodka drinker, but Absolute Boston just came out. That's elderberry and black tea flavored. That's a limited edition, of course. Compass Box Orangery is back. That's a full-size bottle now, and it's $45. We brought in from Lanark, that's a Duncan Terrell line, Strath Isla 42-year-old. That's great. We tried it here, and it's full of flavor, $260 a bottle. And the Spey Malt Macallan 1970 is in stock now. We had sent out an email blast about that. That was a one-time deal. They made a mistake on the bottling line and bottled it at cask strength. That's 106.6 proof. Again, it's a 37-year-old, and it's $300. So anyone interested in that should jump on that because that is limited. Coahuila and Talisker, I think I might have mentioned this last time, but those are back in stock, both 18-year-old.
And you have the new Laphroaig 18 as well.
Yes, we do.
What's your price on that one, by the way?
The Laphroaig 18, which replaces the 15-year-old, is on the shelf for $160, and it's a 96 proof.
Let's talk about this week's special. What have you got to offer listeners?
Well, we have a great exclusive here at the shop. It's a Glengarry 17-year-old. It's bottled by Classic Cask. It's 86 proof, and we have it on the shelf here for $85. But for your listeners, we're bringing it down to $75. Now, that represents a greater discount than any other discount that they may want to apply to any other sale. So if you are a Malt Advocate Whiskey Society member, this discount would beat that discount. So no other discounts apply. This is a one-time shot deal. It's good for the week. And, again, you know, get it while it's hot because, again, this is also limited. And anyone who knows Glengarry knows it's got some great wood, some great vanilla, a real easy drink, good for this time of year. And a very affordable 17-year-old at $75.
And this goes on sale when the store opens 8 a.m. Monday morning, the 21st of September?
Right.
And then ends at closing time Friday night, the 25th?
That's correct.
Anything else people should know about this week that's coming out? I know you have the new Charles McLean book, World Whiskey, in stock too, right?
That's right. It's a great book, great photos, lots of information, makes a great gift. And I think we actually beat the Amazon having that in stock. So anyone interested in that should give us a call, and we'll put that together with any other scotches or bottles that they put together.
And we'll have an interview with Charles hopefully on that in the next couple of weeks.
That's great.
Anything else you've got coming on the line in the next few weeks that we should know about?
I'm hoping to hear actually today about a label approval for a new Tuttletown rye that we're hoping to have coming out. It's a rye. It's going to have our own label on it. Again, a limited supply, but I'm waiting on the state. So hopefully by the time we speak next week, I'll have some good news.
Okay. Thanks, Jonathan. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks. Take care.
Remember, you can place your order through the link on the WhiskeyCast website or by calling area code 212-685-2442. That number again for Park Avenue Liquors is 212-685-2442. In the What I'm Tasting This Week department, last time around I promised a head-to-head comparison of the new Glenlivet Nadura Triumph 1991 with the regular cask-strength Nadura. The Triumph is 2 years older, 18 years old, compared to 16 for the regular expression, and it's bottled at 48% ABV compared to the cask-strength 57% for the regular Nadura. I get a lot of fruity notes, a nice maltiness, too, on the Triumph's nose, with a touch of honey and toffee candy, Heath bars specifically. The taste is spicy with a touch of cinnamon, but it fades to a nice balance of sweet notes with a touch of orange peel and lemon zest. Now, the regular expression's higher alcohol strength makes the nose drier and a bit more astringent. Wood notes are also strong, and there's just a hint of straw. The taste is nuttier and spicier than the Triumph. I get notes of roasted almonds and cilantro, a touch of brown sugar once the spices fade, and a drier finish. This one benefits from a splash of water. It really brings out the almond notes and smooths out the alcohol burn. I like the mouthfeel of the Triumph edition, though. It's thicker and creamier than the regular Nadura. Scoring them, I give the Triumph an 89 and the regular Nadura an 85. I also had the chance to taste some of the Balvenie's 17-year-old limited editions, including this year's Madeira cask version. The series started in 2001 with the Isla cask, which has become much sought after and hard to find. It was bottled at 43% ABV, and I found nice peat-influenced notes of tar and creosote on the nose, but they didn't overpower the vanilla and burnt cream notes I'd expect in a Balvenie. Those notes carried over into the taste, with a great balance between the Islay influence and the Highland base. The finish was smooth and lingering, and I'm scoring this classic a 94. The Madeira cask has a hard act to follow. I loved last year's rum cask version. The nose on the Madeira cask is fruity, with notes of orange peel and lemon, light and dry. The taste, thickly sweet with a strong taste of maple syrup and just a hint of cinnamon to balance things out a bit. The finish fades quickly, almost too quickly. I'm scoring this one an 83. As always, these are my impressions, and your tastes may well be different. Take these notes for what they're worth. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. The Kentucky Bourbon Festival winds up this weekend, but there's a Jefferson's Reserve tasting scheduled for Thursday night at Proof on Main in Louisville. It's part of the Urban Bourbon Trail. This coming weekend is the second weekend of the Stockholm Beer and Whiskey Festival in Sweden. The Loch Ness Whiskey Parliament convenes Friday night at the Fiddler's Inn in Drumnadrocket, Scotland. And Friday is the Laphroaig Live online tasting webcast as well. It's being held at the Maker's Mark Distillery in Loretto, Kentucky. This coming weekend is also the Autumn Speyside Whiskey Festival in and around Dufftown, and one of my favorite festivals, Whiskey Live Paris. Finally, the Equus Restaurant in Louisville will hold a wild turkey dinner with master distiller Jimmy Russell on September 29th. You'll find a complete calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig Quarter Cask. Just click on the Laphroaig banner at the WhiskeyCast website to become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Islay. As I mentioned at the top of the show, the Macallan is coming out with the latest edition of its Lalique series, a $15,000 57-year-old Macallan in a Lalique crystal decanter. There are also four new whiskeys in the Macallan 1824 collection, which is only available at duty-free stores. The Select Oak is a mix of sherry and bourbon casks. The Whiskey Maker's Edition uses barley grown at the Macallan Estate. The Estate Selection uses a combination of regular sherry and bourbon casks, along with specially selected sherry hogsheads, and the fourth version is the limited release, which will change from year to year. I sat down with Edrington Group Director of Malts, Ken Greer, this week to talk about and taste the 1824 collection.
What we're trying to do here is to really put together a range of whiskies that, through having different expressions, come together to tell the complete story of the Macallan. They have not only a great story, but they also have individual differences in the whiskies themselves that support the story for each of those expressions. So, for instance, if you take something like Whiskey Maker's Edition, where you have 25% of the whiskies in there are made from Golden Promise barley, you get a depth and a weight. If you take Estate Reserve, you have something which is non-chill filtered, which is rich, robust, complex, just in the way that the directors of the Macallan many years ago may have given those to their guests and friends. So the whole thing is a concept about great stories, telling the complete tale of Macallan, but with it really coming through in the glass. And the most important departure from this is that we've given Bob Logarno the ability to work with all the casks that we have at Macallan. Complete freedom, unfettered from the tyranny of age. We're able to select casks that go beautifully together, presented and vatted when they're at the ripest.
And unlike most of the expressions, this one has no age statement in many ways, like the Cask Strength Edition, which is the only other Macallan that has no age statement.
Correct. Cask Strength is really an interesting departure for us. It was able for people, enable people to see that as Macallan with the graphic equalizer really put to full, with all the knobs turned up, you know, with something which is full and strong and robust. What we've done here is given Bob the ability to display the different character of the wonderful casks that we use. We are the only whiskey distillery of our scale which noses and tastes every single cask of the Macallan. We describe, we craft, we work carefully out where these casks can be used. And Bob has had the complete panoply of casks to look at, to work on, to bring together to tell each aspect of the story, and to use specific cast to tell the story of each expression brilliantly.
Let's also talk now, because you're going to come out with the next edition of the Lalique Cask. Is it hard to come out with a luxury item like that in an economy like this?
Well, it's funny. We have a wonderfully consistent and loyal following. What we've tried to do with Lalique, we work with one of the world's great luxury brands to produce a beautiful thing. Something which is a real objet d'art, where you don't only have the beauty of the whiskey itself, but you have the beauty of the vessel it's held in. And again, each of these tells a story of what we call the six pillars, the things that make the Macallan distinct and different and better. This is a good time for us because we have three audiences for this. One is we have our drinkers who have anticipated eagerly the launch of a 57-year-old product, the second oldest Macallan that we have ever released, and that's fantastic for them. We have the whole investment and collectible audience, where we've seen the price of Macallan at auction really rocket forward. We set a new record for the price of a 50-year-old Macallan at $16,000 in Scotland 3 weeks ago. And finally, you have the Lalique collectors and adorers who love to see something new coming from that fantastic fashion house. So we think it's a good time. We think it's appropriate. We think, given the craft, the rarity and quality of that particular 57-year-old Scotch, that it's a good time to release something at a great price, which will really entice people into that great collectible.
What else are you working on as far as the Macallan goes?
Well, we have a whole series of really interesting things happening at the minute. We had enormous success from our Masters of Photography idea, where we shot 1,000 individual Polaroid photographs with a really funky fashion photographer, Rankin, who's originally a Scot. We produced a wonderful photo essay of One Summer in the Life of Macallan that was twinned, where you had the original Polaroid photograph with a one-off label which matched your photograph with a 30-year-old fine oak, and that's been amazing. We've had many, many millions of dollars of publicity, enjoyment, debate, collectability. That's great, and we're working about how do we develop that idea forward. We're working on further initiatives with Lalique, things that can continue to drive and enhance that partnership, do new things and give beautiful things to the world, as well as the world of Scotch. We have recently introduced some new sizes on Macallan. We have a 175 bottle of 12-year-old, which is great given the economy at the minute. It's a really interesting way of getting into the product. New sizes in 18 at 375 ml to enable our users to get into that in a different size, different price point. We have a great sampling program going on around the US, which is really designed to allow people to bring along friends that maybe haven't enjoyed the wonder of single malt to date, to really get them to observe different expressions, to give them the vocabulary, and to have the fun of getting into new stuff. So we're doing a lot of stuff.
And that's the Celebrate the Macallan program, right?
Absolutely right. Celebrate the Macallan has been phenomenal for us. We are one of the top brands in terms of trial to conversion, the ability for people to drink the product. We have a very, very simple metric, which is called recommend a friend. The only measure that we use in the success of our brand is, do you think it's good enough to recommend to one of your very best friends? And our record is peerless in that area. And we're going to continue that.
Let's talk about your other malt, Highland Park. The boys up in Orkney have some unusual stuff coming out these days.
Well, we have some just incredible stuff coming out from Highland Park. We are absolutely delighted that Jerry Tosh, our brand ambassador there, was lauded as being Ambassador of the Year the other week at a major awards ceremony. We've picked up fantastic awards for 21-year-old and for 40-year-old. We have some phenomenal stuff coming out in Highland Park. We have a couple of vintages coming out, a 1968, mm-hmm. which will be in the US. There's also a 64 going to be available very, very selectively. These will be presented in a quite incredible new pack. But also the quality of the liquid, the robustness, this incredible nature of this unique sherry cask and aromatic peat smoked product is quite, quite different. And for people now to be able to determine and compare different vintages of Highland Park is quite new and builds on the success that we've enjoyed with Fine and Rare from Macallan. We also have, sometime early in the year, a huge departure for us, which is the first time the industry has seen a permanent 50-year-old product. We're not talking about 5 bottles or 10 bottles a year here. We're talking about something we aim to sustain, albeit in relatively small numbers, permanently for the brand. And that's quite a departure and was really tantamount to us declaring our position on Highland Park, like Macallan, as being the world's two leading single malts.
And part of that was because, in fact, Highland Park stopped selling single casks to bottlers and to distributors and to individual stores, so that you're able to hang on to some of these older whiskeys, right?
Yeah, single cask is interesting. I was the guy that actually provoked the single cask debate early on. We had wonderful support from some of our valued partners in the trade. We had a lot of fun with people finding differences between some of the casks. But we ultimately took a strategic decision, which is that we have very, very rare and limited stocks of these prestige older whiskies. And we decided the best way to do this was to actually look at making sure that we sustain the right level of supply against specific age brackets like 30, 40, and 50, so we could hold back stock to make sure we had enough of those to go around, because they are absolute classics.
You also have another new Highland Park coming out, the Magnus Edition, right?
Yeah, the Magnus Edition is quite interesting, fascinating, and we've taken a bit of a departure there. Still our license to perhaps take aspects from the rich, interesting, and varied history of the brand to look at people or places or styles that were instrumental in the brand in its history and its development. And again, it's good for us to continue not only to have the core range, but to basically do things there where we talk about experiencing very old whiskies and diversity, a permanence about the older age range, but we still want to spice it up, Mark, with things that are new and different and interesting. We will also be having a major new launch in travel retail at the upcoming Cannes show, but I can't possibly tell you what that is.
Yes, you can. Nobody's listening.
Oh, yes. But wait, look out for it. We have quite an interesting approach to travel retail coming up. This will be announced at the Cannes Duty Free Symposium in October this year. And I think there will be a high degree of excitement around what we tell people then.
How hard is it to maintain the status and the quality of the Macallan, which is an iconic brand in Scotch whiskey, and Highland Park, which perhaps not an icon, but still a very important brand in Scotch whiskey?
Well, the thing about the group we operate within, which is the Edrington Group, which is responsible for the Famous Grouse, Highland Park, Macallan, and also has interests in Currysark and Glenrothes, we aim to do things the right way. It's maybe not avant-garde, it's maybe old thinking, but we think everything starts in the quality of the product. We've got to make sure that we have products here that all of us are proud to drink, that can consistently delight our target audience wherever they are. And that's kind of where we start from. So from that premise, you know, it's not tough, because our guys are hardwired. It's in their DNA to only produce great scotches. The interesting thing is to make sure that we continue to enjoy the levels of consistency, high quality. And then we do think it's important to provoke. Within the world of Scotch whiskey, you know, we've provoked with a fine and rare collection from Macallan. We've provoked with a fine oak expression of Macallan, which now constitutes 26% of everything we sell around the world. It's bringing new users, whether it's, you know, younger guys, young females, or even new occasions like weekends, early evenings, into people's repertoire. So we're happy to go on and innovate. And we've got to make sure that we not only produce great Scotch from now going forward, that we provoke in terms of some of the things we do, but also that we do things that keep your listeners really interested in the category.
I was about to ask about the fine oak collection, because I'm sure you know there are still some Macallan loyalists out there who haven't quite forgiven Edrington for doing this yet.
It's amazing. I mean, fine oak is phenomenal. It really is something there which, for many years, other distillers in the industry would actually drink the Macallan unsherried, and they would say it was amazing. So we decided that there was an opportunity there to get people in and to give them the advantage of seeing three different wood types. The finesse of triple cast, to me, is like producing a fine tourbillon Swiss watch. The challenge of not only selecting and vatting wonderful casts of sherry oak, but to basically take the three cast types of American oak seasoned with sherry, Spanish oak seasoned with sherry, and the finest American small batch bourbon casks, and to bring them together, gives us something which is a perfect stablemate to sherry oak, where sherry oak is, to me, the quintessential thoroughbred, almost formal after-dinner drink, big on sherry, big on tannins and rich. Fine oak is its perfect bedfellow. You have something that's a little bit more tie-off, a little more relaxed for those people that like a lighter style, but with incredible complexity. Fine Oak has been amazing. It's been growing at double the rate of sherry oak for the last 5 years. And as I said, Mark, it now constitutes about 25% of all we sell in Macallan. It's been an amazing success. The single most successful new expression of single malt ever in the industry's history.
Let's bring it back to the 1824 collection. Is there something out of these three whiskies and the fourth that's coming out in October that might make its way into a regular Macallan expression that would be more widely available than just in travel retail?
No. In a word, no. We kind of think that it's nice to have something in duty-free where all your listeners here can basically find something that will surprise. I mean, the whole thing about Fine Oak 1824 is about you have this story and you have a journey. You can stay where you are and enjoy something like Whiskey Maker's Edition, or you can want to travel from Select Oak to Whiskey Maker's Edition or State Reserve and come back to Select Oak. We like to make sure that there's something there which is exclusive, something which is a little bit different, something which gives a perfect counterpoint to what we do with the other two expressions. So at the minute, you know, we're pretty happy with that duty fee.
As for tasting notes, all three are excellent. I scored the Select Oak a 92, the Whiskey Maker's Selection a 94, and the Estate Selection a 96. The limited release is not available yet. By the way, that 96 ties the highest score I've given out this year. The only other whiskey I've rated that high was the Parker's Heritage Collection 2009 Bourbon from Heaven Hill. I've posted my tasting notes for all three on the ratings page of the WhiskeyCast website. Next time around, I'll have tasting notes on the Yamazaki 1984 single malt and Tabiki 12-year-old blend from Suntory, the entire Buffalo Trace Antique Collection, and the Jefferson's Reserve Presidential Select Bourbon. That's all for this episode of WhiskeyCast. You'll find links to my Twitter feed and the WhiskeyCast Facebook page at the WhiskeyCast website, along with the calendar of events, links, the WhiskeyCast store, my photo gallery, and a complete archive of past episodes. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. And my email address is comments@whiskeycast.com. I'd love to hear from you. WhiskeyCast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2009, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.